welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus, and I have an able-bodied assistant right over here.
By the name of Aaron Flores.
Making it happen.
We are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way, doing lots of things impromptu.
Covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communication, and the internet.
Oh, yeah.
And today, racing.
Seriously. Yeah, this is going to be the episode fraught with controversy. I doubt that highly. Lindsay is our guest. And is it Lindsay Kandra?
Kandra.
Okay. I'm never sure.
That's okay. I respond to all sorts of mispronunciations of my last name.
That's kind of you. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you in. And we are drinking, what is it, Robert Mondavi
it's
from
red,
2009.
Red in a green bottle.
Yeah, which I think is code for this isn't very classy. But yeah, then I don't know wine very well either. So, cheers.
Cheers.
I will grab mine. You will grab yours. Aaron, you will grab.
I will grab a McFuddy's. Soda.
Yeah.
That's not a twist.
Oh, do you want an opener?
I will need an opener.
All right.
Like, there we wrecking go. My palm here trying to open
seriously.
This thing.
Yeah, seriously. And that's like the common mistake. I think before the time of twist top bottles, it was possible to just have an opener with you. It was reasonable. Like, you knew you always needed one.
Right.
Now that the twist top bottle is here, it's really easy to say, I can open this with my hand, and then you can't.
So one thing I want to say about this is not really a soda so much as what they call a elixir.
I think that's code for soda. I think that's like 1890s code for soda.
Specifically, they call it a pepper elixir, which I was reading the ingredients has extracts of pepper.
So we don't know what kind of pepper we're talking about this. It's
we'll find out.
Black pepper, red pepper, green pepper. The orange and yellow ones I think are my favorite.
Oh, that goes right to your nose.
Yeah?
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah.
It tastes kind of like a Moxie.
Okay. Like the original Elixir,
only,
Moxie.
Oh, gosh, that kind of hurts your tongue.
Interesting. Are you going to be able to make it through a 12-ounce bottle of this?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. Lindsay, are you familiar with the original Moxie product?
I am not.
Okay. It's not a cola. It tastes like tar. I don't know. It's one of those like weird.
It tastes like cough syrup.
Uh-huh. It has probably a little bit of licorice tones to it, but it's not like a licorice flavored thing. It's just a really, it's dark and kind of not sludgy, because soda really doesn't work with sludgy. It's not like a stout beer or something, but it I used to vend it from a shop I worked at, and it was interesting. It was a tasty kind of sort of flavor, but it wasn't for everybody. So
sounds like something I need to start leaving in the work refrigerator for whoever's stealing my drinks from.
Does this happen?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I have. So there's a kombucha thief. Like,
ooh.
Everybody in my office pretends like they don't drink kombucha, but as soon as I bring one in, it disappears. And so somebody is a closeted kombucha lover, and I'm going to find out who this person is.
Hashtag only in Portland. That's great.
True. Exactly.
That's great. Wow, do you make your own?
Oh, no.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite brand?
I think it's called Wonder Drink. It's the Asian pear variety. It's sort of like the really lightweight kombucha. Mm.
Yeah, that was the first one I ever had. And I remember it was kind of before I knew what it was. And even before I knew that it was supposed to be good for you, or that it was kind of like it had like natural, like it's more natural than soda. But I was kind of expecting iced tea or something, I guess.
Right.
And then I had the kombucha and I was like, wow, this is really weird. And I never got it again for like years. So, yeah.
I'm a fan of the lighter stuff. Somebody dared me to drink one of the ones that had the chia seeds in it. And that was one of the grossest things I think I've ever. It was kind of like, it was kombucha plus like old tapioca pudding consistency. And
oh, the consistency of tapioca.
Yeah, because the chia seeds, you know, the chia seeds, you let them soak in water long enough, they get kind of slimy.
Yeah. It's like,
so it's not like a liquid. It's more like a... It's very gel-like, and if you have a texture problem with anything you eat or drink, which I do, it was not a pleasant experience.
Oh, wow. I only had the chia pet. Did you ever have those, Aaron?
I did not have a chia pet.
You get the little adobe thing, and you can smear seeds
like
over
that.
It and grow. It was supposed to be the chia head also, where you grow hair on like this little adobe head. I like the idea. I always wondered if I could actually do that to my own head, but I think the time it takes to grow.
I think that was an SNL skit at some point. Yeah.
Okay. So I wasn't original because I don't think I've seen that one.
Oh.
It's a pretty good one.
I like the idea. Did it work?
I don't know.
I think they just spray painted somebody's afro with green paint. Right. But it was still really funny.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm trying to think now of how you could do that. You could get like a swim cap or a shower cap or something, and you could grow the chia on that. So you wouldn't have to worry about it like rubbing off while you were asleep on your pillow or something. Or you could use one of those Egyptian neck braces that they used way back before pillows were invented. I think that would be two ways to make the chia head work for an actual living person.
Just sleep in an armchair.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think there was actually a chi bama as well. Like you could get, I think, the president's head at the point that he got elected. So lots of ways. Yes, but chia, you're not a fan of chia, Lindsay?
Not in the form where it takes in kombucha, no.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like either of you guys, do you remember Orbitz, the soda or the drink?
I don't.
No. It was really like syrupy, but before Orbitz.com was a travel website, Orbitz was a soda. I keep saying soda. It was a drink, kind of like a Snapple or something, except it was like this syrupy sugar water in which were floating little tapioca balls.
Really?
Yeah.
This is like the precursor to like bubble tea in a way.
It was like a lava lamp you could drink. I think it was really fascinating and really strange. But I remember I had that and Spam, just a can of Spam for like a lunch on some event that I went out on. That's the
most gelatinous lunch.
And I was like, look how awesome. Yeah. Look how crazy I am. I am drinking a weird beverage and eating a weird thing. And I think I was very proud of my individuality as a child. Not necessarily a good thing. So yeah. So anyways, Lindsay, we've got you in, and I think we were just about to launch into this when I said, hey, we should talk about this. We should record it and get everything live, as it were. So we've got you in to talk about bicycle racing, because you're involved with that.
Yes.
And I think you were just about to tell us about a camping trip. And before we do, how's the air? Because it's kind of, I opened the window because I wasn't sure.
Is it perfect?
Is it perfect? Okay. Right. If it gets too chilly, let me know. I'll close it.
10-4.
All right, cool. So you went to McKenzie Pass.
I did.
Is it the pass or somewhere up there?
It's the pass. It's Highway 242 that runs from 126 over to Sisters. I think it connects someplace at Highway 20.
Okay, so
Sisters.
Eugene, Oregon to Sisters, Oregon. Yeah.
So they have it open for bikes only for about 4 weeks out of the year. Mm-hmm. And I decided yesterday to go up and ride the Eugene side of it. So down from 126. And I think it ended up being about a 135 foot climb from bottom to the summit up at the observatory, and then I came back down.
Nice.
But the top half is no cars, and so that's the part that's got the, I don't know if you've ever been on 242, but it's very snake like.
Okay.
And you have the whole road.
The road twists back and forth.
So if you're comfortable descending at a high rate of speed with the whole road, it was the bomb.
So
it really was.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about oncoming traffic or anything.
No, I think I scared a couple of recreational riders coming around the corners. You come straight onto people, and you just never know who's coming at you and if they have bike control. So I would have been equally frightened seeing me 35 miles an hour coming out of a corner.
Yeah.
But at that point, it really wasn't my problem.
Those are formidable speeds.
Oh, yeah.
And this is because it's like they don't plow that over the winter.
They don't.
That mountain pass is covered with snow from November till now?
Yeah.
About May?
Yeah, and they usually don't open it till mid-June.
Okay.
But it was a really low snow year. And even up the Eugene side, the wall of snow only hit my shoulder. I've been up there before where it's been 10 feet over your head. They'll plow it out, and it's actually, two stories tall, which is really cool to ride down.
You're just slicing through a canyon of ice.
And it's like, if I get out of control, I'm just going to plow into a snow wall. There's
that's
no
true. How great is that?
This at all.
Wow. So that's like the safest way to achieve high speeds of almost anything.
Unless there was one of those big kid pits full of foam, that might be a little safer, but a wall of snow probably runs a close second.
Right. A Burger King ball pit. And if we could set up a way where we could just ride our bikes like straight into a ball pit, that would be fantastic.
I agree with that.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of how that, what's the elevation? Do you know?
I took a picture of it on my phone. It was 5,300 feet, something at the top.
Okay, yeah.
And you climb, my thing said 4,300 feet, so I must have started from somewhere around 900,000 feet.
That's a good long climb.
It's a good slog, but I did it the first time when I did Cycle Oregon a couple of years ago, not even a couple years ago, maybe 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I remember it being a lot harder, but I think that's because that was early in my biking career. And it was the last day of Cycle Oregon that I remember it just being this terrible slog. And I don't really think anything on that climb is over 6 or 7% now. Now that I've had, you know, experience with much more heinous climbs, you just get in your rhythm and there's a couple places where the view cuts out and you can see the entire Cascades. And about 4 miles from the top, you come through a corner and it's that black lava field at the top. Just like all of a sudden it's, you're surrounded by black lava rock. It's a really cool ride, and just having the road to yourself where you're not having to really worry about safety.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's amazing. And I'd recommend anybody that can handle that kind of climbing, because it's a slog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To definitely put that on their list of things to do, because there are so many beautiful roads that you wish that you could have to yourself for one day out of the year.
Seriously.
And this is one of them.
I mean,
they give cyclists about 3 weeks of it.
Okay. So when does this become no longer an option?
It just depends on the type of year and the snowfall. They'll announce it on the ODOT website.
Okay.
But I think it opened last weekend on the Sisters side and this last weekend on the Eugene side.
Okay, yeah. There really is no way to cheat at this, I just realized, because if it's closed to vehicles, like, you can't have anybody drop you off at the top. Like, you have to achieve that height yourself.
You actually have to get to the top.
Yeah.
And bring stuff in case you flat, because there's nobody coming up to save your butt. So.
Right. Yeah.
It's a long walk.
It would be a really long walk. Yeah. We saw a couple guys who somebody had flatted, and they were on touring, some sort of really wide touring bike. So there was nothing I could do to help them, because I was riding normal road bike. Yeah. So
were they like fat bikes or just like mountain sized tires?
No, they were like, I would say like a 28.
Okay.
And my tires are for an 18 to 21.
Oh, so you're like super thin tires.
Super thin racing tires. I had my race wheels on for the sole purpose of seeing how fast I could get.
Yeah.
I had, you know, I'm one of those Strava geeks. I don't know if you guys know what Strava is, but Strava is like the huge racing thing.
Strava, is that new as of the time that everyone had a smartphone in their pocket, or has it been around for longer than that?
It's a smartphone app. I never knew about it until I got an iPhone.
Because Strava is basically, it keeps track of where you are, GPS coordinates, and how fast you're traveling.
Mm-hmm.
And is the idea that you race against yourself?
In theory, the idea is that you're supposed to be keeping your own time, but the application ranks you against everybody else that's done the same segment.
It
it ends up being, for every climb in Portland, there's a pissing contest about who's like the fastest to the top of Thompson, who's the fastest, you know, to the top of whatever. But I Strava'd my ride yesterday just because I wanted to see how many feet I climbed.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have a bike computer because I washed it in the washing machine a year ago.
Oh.
And I got to the top, and, you know, I'm not a slow rider. And it said, well, you're 28 out of 43 people. I'm like, God, how did this happen?
Like, what the fuck? I thought I did very well.
Well, it turns out that last year they ran the Cascade Cycling Classic up and around that. So a bunch of professionals had ridden it.
Yeah.
And I went up at, I think my average speed from top to bottom was something around 11 or 12 miles an hour. Some gal had done it close to 18 miles an hour.
Holy crap.
Like going up.
Going uphill.
Holy shit.
Wow.
I mean, I don't even usually get that fast going down a lot of things, but so that was humbling.
Yeah, that's I can't even conceive that. Well, you'd have to be like in such good shape, and you would have to have really light equipment,
and you'd have to be about 50 pounds lighter than I am.
Okay,
that really helps too.
And you're no heavy person.
No, no. Yeah.
You're diminutive. Can I say that? Is that?
I don't know if I know what that means.
Kind of smallish.
I'm smallish. We're now best friends. You just call me smallish.
I think podcasting is all about breaking down the barriers that stand between you and the other person that you don't know. So here we are.
I think I'm smallish for an average person, but around professional cyclists, I probably resemble a monster truck a little bit. So
okay. Well, don't be too hard on yourself. But okay. So how long have you been bicycle riding? Like, you said you started your career in bicycling some time ago, and...
So I've been racing for 10 years.
Okay.
And I include racing triathlon in that. I don't know if a lot of bike racers would include triathlon as part of their racing career.
Because it's diluted with other forms of movement.
I guess.
Okay.
Or because they can't usually ride in a straight line, and there's a lot of contempt among sort of different pods of bike racers. But I started doing triathlon in 2003 and did that for, I'd say, 3 or 4 years. I coached with Team in Training, and I got involved with starting one of the local tri clubs, did some long course triathlons, long courses, half Ironman stuff. And
Ironman is
ridiculous.
Yeah, that's a marathon plus
117 miles plus 2.4 in the water.
Okay, so that's intense. That's a lot.
It's really ridiculous. I mean, I could do the swimming and I could do the biking, but the idea of running a marathon at the end of that makes me want to stab myself in the eye.
Seriously, yeah. Especially since the marathon comes last,
right?
Like that, I feel like it would be easier to run. I'm saying this as someone who has never run a marathon in his life and never even close, but it seems like it might be easier to do the running first and then like cool down on the bicycle. But
then
maybe
you'd
not.
Be swimming last and everybody would drown.
Oh, yeah. And that would be lame.
That would be so lame.
We shouldn't do that. Okay. It's there for a reason. It's that way for a reason. Yeah.
So I had, you know, I did my experience with triathlon and realized, taking a look at my triathlon, my career on quote unquote in triathlon, really good swimmer. I'm an excellent cyclist. Like I would have bike splits that were pro level bike splits. And then I could run a half marathon approximately 45 minutes slower than pretty much the 80 year olds. I mean, I was a runner in college, but 800 meters and half marathon are totally different.
Right.
And I hated running. I still to this day, the idea of running more than 3 miles is not interesting to me. Mm-hmm. So I started, I did cyclocross for a couple years just because I had a cyclocross bike.
And you used the word split.
Split.
Can you define that for anyone who doesn't know, AKA me?
Okay. So when you have something like anything that involves, when triathlon, your bike split is how long it takes you to do the bike portion of the race. So you have a run split, a bike split, and a swim split.
I see. So it's just like the segment.
Yeah. So my bike segment they were great. It was the run. It was just like, wah, wah. But I did cyclocross for a while just because I don't think that you can get a Portland passport unless you've been to a cyclocross race. Yeah. So I'd had one that I was commuting on at the time, and I started just going out and slogging around and met a lot of really awesome people. I've been racing cyclocross for, this will be my 8th season, season coming up. So I've been doing that for a pretty long time. And a friend of mine encouraged me to go out and start racing criteriums in probably 2008. And I think the first criterium I did, I might have pooped my pants twice because it was just scary. Like even with, you're doing it with Cat 4 beginner women.
Okay.
And I'm a pretty decent bike handler, but not a lot of beginner racers don't have the bike handling skills. And so it wasn't as...
So you're more scared of like what the other cyclists are doing.
It's like roller derby.
Yeah. Okay.
It really is.
That's already making it cooler in my mind now.
Yeah. It's like roller derby. And I did my first race and I loved it. And I did the next race, which was the next day, which was the state championship race. And I was second in the Cat 4 championship race on a steel framed bike, totally not geared. I popped out of my pedal in the last 100 meters and still managed to do really well and realized this is what I'm good at. This is what I should be doing. Screw the running part of this. I like going really fast for 45 minutes and banging around. So,
like that's more pleasure for your buck or whatever, I guess.
Oh, and it's
just more fun.
Like fast is fun. Like triathlon, you're not really going fast. You're riding in a straight line and you can't draft. And I was like, I'm in a bunch of, with a bunch of people and you can bump around and you're going really fast and it's kind of scary.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
Yeah. Okay. So we should probably load at this point. Aaron, you and I will load our neuroses into the conversation so we can talk about our perceptions of racing. And
Bunch of jerks, all of them.
Well, I think that's probably a good distillation.
Except for David Hetty.
Well, sure. David's a great guy. And now so is Lindsay. So we have...
Okay.
And so is Steve in Wyoming.
You're one of the good ones.
Oh,
right, right. So basically, for myself, I would say I'm either... so insecure that I can't handle the competition, or I'm so secure in myself that I don't need to compete or something like that. I have this weird like non-sports thing. Like both of my parents played basketball. My dad's a huge like sports fan and everything. And for whatever reason, it never translated to me. So the sports side of bicycling, for whatever reason, has kind of been put in this other place in my head. So I don't have... I don't have any like frame of reference to understand why that might be fun. But But I think maybe as I grow older, I'm starting to figure some of that out. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. Aaron?
Mine would be very different from yours.
Okay.
I've always said, I've seen a few cyclocross races. I think they're awesome. In fact, I would love to be in cyclocross. I would love to do like bike racing. And I get, even when it's just, you know, your wife and you and me, like out on a tour, I get kind of competitive with you guys a little bit, you know. You'll see me rocket ahead for a little while.
It's true. So one of my favorite experiences with Aaron is, one of my favorite stories.
Oh, boy.
Well, this happens, I guess it's happened several times. Basically, we'd be out for some sort of group ride, and a guy, so you can also tell me, is Fred, is that a terrible word to use when talking about racing?
Well, Fred, usually it signifies people who you... Oh, God, this is so hard to sound. I sound like a total asshole.
It's okay.
Freds are people who just don't know what they're doing when they're riding.
Okay.
See?
Okay, interesting.
It's a different definition for whoever is speaking it.
Yeah,
right.
Every
okay.
group has a different... Like, Freds for bike racers aren't necessarily people that aren't on...
Right.
Don't race, but I think of Freds... Like a lot of Freds do Cycle War Again.
Okay.
That's kind of the thing they do every year. Yeah. And they injure
themselves.
They
get their kit just for that ride. Or
And there's not a lot of... My thing with Freds is there's not a lot of self-awareness on the bike. Because there's a lot of damage that can happen when people are riding on bikes in close quarters at high speeds.
Yes. Yeah.
And to me, Freds are people who got... You know, they can't ride in a straight line. Or when you say... On your left, they don't pay attention because they're listening to their earphones too loud.
Or they move left.
Or the ones that try to race anybody over the Hawthorne Bridge.
Yes.
Right, right. So this is, this is
Wait,
where...
before you tell this story.
Okay, go ahead.
I want to finish my neuroses.
Oh, yeah, of course. Okay.
So, I can get really competitive when, like, the I don't know, itch or whatever. Whenever that reptilian part of my brain, you know, sort of engages.
Right.
And so I've always said I could never cyclocross. I could never do any kind of competitive cycling because it would ruin cycling for me. I could then not go on like any kind of weekend camping trip or any tour because, or even like commute like I do, just because I would be so in that competitive mode. And, you know, if I'm not doing good enough, you know, I would get into this mode of like, you know, fuck my bike.
Interesting.
You know, or if I'm doing really good, then I'd be like a complete asshole to everybody around me, you know.
Sure.
Cruising the 205 trail, like, you know, speeding by.
Sure. Okay. So I can't let myself be competitive and you can't keep yourself from being competitive.
Well, right.
Or something like that.
I sort of have to like cage that demon in a way.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's the negative aspect because I'm not saying that competitive things are in themselves bad.
No.
It's why we play games. Yeah. So... Yeah, okay, that kind of unpacks a little bit. So we go out for a group ride, you and I and a couple other folks, Aaron, and a guy in full racing kit or whatever, maybe a Fred, maybe not, is out for a ride, and he ends up passing us. So Aaron's first response, wearing like jeans and what?
Was this the Century
Adidas
ride we did?
That happened there, yeah.
Okay.
And I think it's happened at least once, one other time. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But I think I kind of egg you into it as well.
I generally bike in jeans.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And a cotton t-shirt and whatever.
This is about the most spandex I've ever worn on a bike.
And you're wearing tuxedo pants.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
So you're well-dressed today. It's from Sunday Parkway, so you got your Sunday best.
I got my Sunday best on. Yeah,
it's a nice red tie. Anyways, the guy in the traditional, you know, padded shorts and jersey and everything, the kit, is kind of rocketing ahead of us, passing us all, because we're a group of six and we're trailing fairly slow. I would probably do the same thing if I was on my own. But he
it wasn't
goes out.
Just that. There was a couple. If it's the same ride that I'm thinking of, it wasn't just that. There was a couple of guys, but it wasn't just that they passed us. It was like they passed us with like without any room. They didn't even like give us any warning.
Okay.
You know, they just jet by us and it was a busy road.
They passed you derisively. Okay.
I took offense to it.
You should scream on your right. That's what I frequently do when people come up and they scare the shit out of me. And it's like, on your right. And it's really confusing to them. Like,
that's fantastic.
Yeah. I'm keeping that one.
Use it.
In the back pocket. Yeah, so Aaron will like go into the drops. He'll go into like, you know, the lowest possible position you can get into.
And I'm already diminutive to
sure, of
word.
Course. Shifting all the way up into like your most difficult gear and like rocketing up to catch this guy. In a version of what I would call the grudge race, when I see someone blowing a red light, I will at that point attempt to demonstrate that you can travel the same amount of distance in the same amount of time while complying with the law. So there's several ways that the grudge race can come out about, but I think that's one of my favorite like thing. Whenever I think of like racing and you, Aaron, that's kind of like the first thing that pops into my head.
And we were kind of loaded too. I mean, not drunk, but like,
although that would have been a story,
we were carrying a few things with us.
Oh, right.
You know, so there's these guys like in their, I don't know, I'm assuming Craben frame anyways.
Right.
And
do you read Bike Snob?
I used to.
Oh, okay.
I'm assuming the Craben comes from
carbon.
It's funny because it's misspelled.
But anyways, yeah, in their carbon frame and, you know, in their kit and jetting by us. And so, yeah, I guess the grudge race was like, I can go just as fast as you guys without my carbon frame or without any kind of gear or anything.
Right.
And probably carrying at least 5 more pounds than you guys.
Right. Okay. There we go. So that's where we come from anyways, Lindsay.
Understandable.
So, yeah. So would this be a good time to talk about perception?
Sure.
Now that we've unpacked that.
Now I'm the asshole. Huh? Is that it?
I would like to say I also am the asshole. I will at least take that, even if it's not if it's not true, I'm very close. So can you think of explanations, Lindsay, for the way that bicycling and racing might be misperceived?
I think that there's a perception that we're all a bunch of assholes. I mean, that's kind of the basic premise that a lot of people who don't bike race go off of.
Okay.
I think, honestly, this could open up a whole Pandora's box. For men that race, that might be true, I think, 50 to 60% of the time, at least in my experience dealing with middle-aged male racers.
Uh-huh.
Some of them are great. Most of them, there's something that's not great about it. For female racers, I think you would be hard-pressed to find. I can't think of anybody that I race with, either past or present, that I would put in the same category.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a gender difference to it.
Interesting.
So
dudes get like super in their head about it.
There's testosterone. I mean, there's a whole lot of like pissing contests and all that kind of stuff that happens with riding with guys. Especially when you're a fast female, we notice it a lot too because guys don't want to get chicked. And so I've seen
there's a word for it. That's great.
That is a fantastic term.
And
it's so chauvinistic. It's amazing.
I'm nothing if not PC. But there is a lot of kind of that gender differential. And I think that another misperception of racing is that it's all about winning.
Uh-huh.
I know I race now, you know, we might get into my whole history of racing a little bit later on.
Sure.
But for now, for me, it's more about the community. And I race my bike on the track and I race my bike at cyclocross. And I've been through a phase in my bicycling career where I could go win races. I mean, I've done that. And maybe some people feed on that and they want to keep winning more races and winning more races. I won a bunch of races and I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's what that feels like and whatever. And you know, I'm still very, very competitive, but it's not what drives it anymore. It's the community that drives it. Unfortunately, what the public sees and what a lot of people who don't race see is the more of the people blasting by you in their kits and their pace lines and giving you 6 inches. And a lot of us aren't like that, but you know,
right,
unfortunately,
right.
That's what you hear about.
Right.
And that's what a lot of what you see.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just going to blame the dudes for that. I don't.
That's reverse chauvinism. Is that, no, does that work? No.
I think it
it's
might
just
be.
chauvinism.
Yeah.
Does it apply both ways?
I mean, it's much in the same way that like reverse racism applies.
Oh, right, you know? It's just racism. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Whatever it is, I'm fine with that opinion because I think I can back it up with empirical and anecdotal evidence.
And it's it's well deserved. You know.
Right. Well, I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad you can come in and say that like on a show with two dudes. And once again, we've already unpacked our neuroses, so it's okay. Yeah. Like, we've already given you access.
I feel fine with it.
Yeah.
I'm fine with my reverse chauvinism.
No, that's great. No, and you're welcome to it. We will support you wholeheartedly. So Do you want to talk about cancer?
It's, I can talk about cancer.
It's kind of a, I feel like it's one of those things, like I'm kind of like tiptoeing around it because it seems like a huge deal, but you're very comfortable talking about
I'm
it.
I'm very so, comfortable yeah. talking about it. And
it's also very integral to your story. So
it is very integral to my story.
Yeah.
So to get to that part in my life, after that race that I did really well in 2008, I started training pretty hard over the summer or the summer. God, how do I get summer and winter confused in Portland?
They're very similar.
Over the winter of 2008-2009, I trained my ass off. I broke up with a boyfriend, and that's what I wanted to do with my time, as I raced and I raced and I raced and I raced. And that was my social circle. That was what was driving me. I didn't like my job. And I won a lot of races. I won a state championship in the Cat 3s. It was like my second Cat 3 race ever.
Category 3? Is that category, is it short for that?
It's okay, Category
cool.
3.
Cool.
Did really, really well and came back in the fall and won a state championship in cyclocross and Category B racing, which is the kind of the not beginner but not pro level racing. And was coming into 2010 and was riding really well. And the first weekend of racing in Oregon was in late February. And I went out and did Sublime Sublimity, which is this heinous, ridiculous road race where you climb like 1,400 feet a lap. Did really well. Went out to Jack Frost, which is the first time trial of the season. Did really well. And I'd had a lump in my breast for, I'd say, probably about 5 weeks. And I didn't do much about it because I also used to have a nipple ring on that side. I've had it in there for like 11 or 12 years. I'm like, you know, maybe I've got a backed up duct or maybe I've gotten an infection.
Okay.
Ignored it. And then I was putting my bike on the bike rack at Jack Frost and my time trial bars came around, swing me and hit me right in the boob. And I'm like, you know, I think I should go get this checked out. And that was on Sunday. And by Wednesday, I had a cancer diagnosis.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That's moving fast.
It was a fast moving event.
Yeah.
Sort of surreal, really, because I'd already paid to race the next weekend and I was like, what am I going to do with my racing? I'm like, you have a tumor in your boob. Like, just,
right.
You know, throw the $30 to the racing gods and like, think about what's important.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay.
It's kind of ridiculous. So that was my diagnosis. I had stage 2B breast cancer based on the size of the tumor and the fact that it had gotten into my armpit. Did the whole rigmarole with the treatment. I was 32 when I was diagnosed, so they put you through the whole chemo. I had the tumor removed, went through chemo, did radiation, and now I'm on something called tamoxifen, which is a hormone regulator because I had hormone receptive cancer.
Okay.
So I'm on that for another 2.5 years, along with medicine to help with the fact that the tamoxifen makes me crazy. Because it's a hormone regulator.
Okay.
And you know about women
right,
and hormones.
Right.
It's like,
sure.
You know, when your wife, you know, she has those that 1 week or whatever every month.
Yeah.
That was me all of the time.
Interesting.
So I'm on a medication for that. And then I'm on a medication because that medication gives me acid reflux. So it's like,
yeah.
Well, high cancer. No.
It's like a tire patch on a tire
dick.
Patch on a tire
yeah.
patch. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so I'm on that. I feel great. I rode almost all the way through my treatment. I rode on my good weeks during chemo, and I used to ride from downtown Portland over to St. Vincent's over the West Hills to my radiation treatments four or five times a week, just because bike riding was what was like a sense of normalcy in my life.
Yeah. Something you've been doing when everything else is changing, you can still do this.
I can still go. And I was slow and sweaty and pale and kind of, I'm assuming that people thought I was crazy because I, you know, if you've seen cancer patients before, we do basically lose all skin color. Like mm-hmm. we're like powder, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I used to ride over the West Hills and people used to look at me like I was nuts, but that
right.
was the one thing that I could do. One of the things I could do to control what was going on in my life was uh-huh. to make sure that I could still get out and ride.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. That's wow. So physically, it was very difficult. Like it was obviously like your body's busy fighting something else. So you can't put as much energy into the actual mechanics of bicycling.
And there's that. And then there's the fact that, you know, I wasn't eating as much as I would normally be eating because
okay.
One of my cycles of chemo basically gave me low grade car sickness for,
oh yeah,
you know, for 2 months.
Uh-huh.
And then the next cycle for the next 2 months gave me hot flashes every 20 to 30 minutes. And so you're constantly like sweating all over the place, and you can't, that's hard to ride when you're, especially in, I went through that cycle of chemo in July and August. Mm-hmm. So it's already hot outside. Jesus. And then I would all of a sudden like break into this like deadpan, totally blank eyed sweat fest every 20 to 30 minutes. And so it was harder to ride, but you know, I just pull over, stop, have a drink of water and keep going. Cause it was just, it was the thing that you hang on to anytime anybody has a traumatic event in their life. There's something that they hang on to so they can, they have some sort of thread to their past and what their life used to be.
Yeah.
And that was what my thread was, mm-hmm. was my biking and my bike community.
Yeah. Yeah. So I assume people probably came around you, kind of giving some boost to their morale and everything too.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. It's a funny, cancer's a funny thing. And I think it happens the same time when somebody has somebody who dies in their life, mm-hmm. that you find out who your friends are and who in your community can handle that kind of stress and trauma and who can't. Mm-hmm. And I had some surprising people who dropped out of my life, and I've had some people that stepped up that I barely knew that are now my best friends, yeah. that had the constitution to deal with things that were difficult,
yeah.
and that weren't completely freaked out by it. I mean, I don't know how I would have reacted having a young friend have cancer,
right.
but it is scary for people, and some people can't handle it. And that's, to me, I don't have any resentment towards that. I don't know if, how I would have reacted in the opposite.
Right. And it's not like it never happens, but it's also like when I think of cancer, like my grandma passed away. I think she had two rounds of it, and eventually that's what did her in. But I always think of like someone who's in their 60s or 70s, like that's when cancer attacks. But it can also happen when someone is far younger than that. Yeah. So, yeah. And I could see that being kind of a freaky thing.
It is a freaky thing. And it was hard for people to talk about. And, you know, I can't say, you know, because I don't think you've been in this position before, but you start thinking about death when you're 32, and that's a uh-huh. weird thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, people don't want to talk to you about death when you're 32.
Right, right.
I mean, it's just, it's weird. We don't have the language for it. We don't have the vocabulary for it.
And we don't have the vocabulary for it in our culture in general.
Yeah,
right.
We don't.
And you were talking about this a couple episodes back about grief. Like we don't know what to do with grief.
We don't know how to deal with it.
And it was hard for me to find someone that I could just say, like, I'm scared I'm going to die to. And I found those friends while I was going through treatment and from the strangest places. Mm-hmm. And that was a real comfort to me. And those are the people that I'm now really tight with, you know, 3 or 4 years later.
Yeah.
So I'm never going to be one of those people that says cancer was a blessing because people are freaking ridiculous.
I think that's kind of painting it in too bright of a picture.
Well, it's like, cancer is the best thing that ever happened to me. And it's like, what are you on?
In a way, I feel like they still haven't quite finished the grieving process.
Or something. Or... I mean, I think about the small indignities, not just the cancer aside, like the fact that you've got something in your body that's revolted against you. There was the fact that your hair falls out.
Sure.
And there's, you know, hair on your head's one thing, but you also lose your eyelashes and your nose hairs.
Yeah.
Those things exist on your body for a reason.
Seriously. Keeping stuff out of your sensitive parts.
Yeah. And keeping things from constantly draining out of your nose. Like there's a small indignities where I remember going on a bike ride in Bend. I did their Tour de Cure in July. And my eyes were sticking shut and there was stuff draining out of my nose. And it's like, I can handle all of this other stuff, but it was like the little small indignities. It's just like, how is this a blessing? This is like, this is such a pain in the ass.
And like you were saying earlier, like you've got to now take all of these meds.
Yeah, I got to take the medication.
Right.
And
you're like, well, fuck you, cancer.
Yeah, fuck you. I've been like that since the very beginning. It's like, really?
Right.
I had a race this weekend, guys. I don't have time to deal with this. So I don't know. I sometimes forget now that I had it, and I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing because I have to remember to give myself a break. I get sick a lot. My immune system is, you know, chemo does really rad things to your immune system. I get sick a lot.
Sarcasm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really rad, quotation marks. I have the gut of a 78-year-old alcoholic. Like I am now gluten intolerant, lactose intolerant, all sorts of things that my body could process before. It now refuses to process, like beer.
Yeah.
Which is
kind of a bummer.
Not cool at all.
Yeah. Hence the wine.
Hence the wine. Yeah.
How about Omission? You drink that stuff? The gluten-free beer from Widmer?
That stuff's so gross.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, Doug. I used to date one of the Widmer brewers. Sorry, Doug. Okay. But the gluten-free beer is gross.
No worries. It's better than was it Stonebridge, I think, or Red Bridge. It was like a sorghum beer, which one of my friends who's gluten intolerant drank. And I had one just to kind of see what it was like, and it was terrible.
Yeah. So I drink a lot of cider.
There you go.
A lot of wine.
Yeah.
A lot of tequila.
A lot of tequila.
You can't argue with tequila.
I know.
Yeah. I had some tequila last night. It was fabulous. Yeah. So, yeah.
But where was I? I don't even know where my train of thought was going.
Let's see. Where we were talking about people coming around, losing your body's capabilities.
Dying.
Grief. Yeah. You're on the way out. Are you... what's the term for where you are with
remission.
The process now.
I'm in remission.
Okay.
Remission is 5 years. I am halfway there.
Okay.
So it'll be October of 2015 before I'm all the way there.
Yeah.
As I said, I sometimes forget.
Yeah.
You know, I have been so lucky compared to people that I've met in treatment, and I've done a couple of cancer survivor events, and I went to a camp in Hawaii last year for young adult cancer survivors. And I listened to their stories and realizing as much as mine sucked, it could suck a lot worse. And so I feel very, very grateful for, you know, the state of the universe where I didn't get blood poisoning and I haven't had any signs of any sort of, what's the non-remission, recurrence. So it's been good, and it's given me a lot of perspective once I started riding the bike again.
Yeah.
Because you know, I got diagnosed on February 24th. On February 22nd, like, racing was the only thing that mattered to me. Like, I wasn't happy with my job. I was pissed off at my ex-boyfriend. All I wanted to do was race my bike. And now I still race. I race a lot of cyclocross. I was at the track on Friday night because the track is awesome. But I don't obsess about it like I used to. And I have this I feel like a very healthy, balanced approach to racing. It's always going to be there. So if I want to take a year off, nobody cares. Like, it'll still be there next year. There isn't some sort of world changing event. If I don't show up for Banana Belt 4 or something, it's like, and I'm on a really, really great team of ladies. It's the second team I've been on since I've been in Portland, and I helped get it together. And the community is awesome. Yeah. With the racing community, especially with women's racing, is so amazing. People are just glad to see you. And, you know, when you have bad races, you get made fun of a little bit, but it's all in good humor.
It's good-natured ribbing.
And I'm like, you guys, I had cancer. And they're like, that was 2 years ago.
Right. You can't pull that card anymore.
Well, I did. Yeah. It was fairly funny. The year after I finished treatment, they allowed me to downgrade to Category 4 in road racing.
Okay.
Because I hadn't scored any points the year before, and I had cancer. And I went out and won like 4 races, and they're like, nope, don't want to hear it anymore. Do not have that excuse anymore.
Is this an unusual thing, like with as far as going one direction or the other? Like, once you grade up, you can't grade down or something like that?
There's rules. You can grade, if you grade up and then you don't score points in your category for a year, you can request a downgrade.
Okay.
It's not like you could sandbag it and then...
I think that's kind of what I was doing.
Okay.
But
yeah,
it was kind of fun, but there was a lot of good natured ribbing about it. So I can't really use that excuse anymore. I kind of pull it out every once in a while, and everybody's like, nope, that was 2 years ago.
Come on. Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of like
out of shape.
Okay. It's like weight in wrestling. Like you don't have like the huge senior wrestling, the tiny freshman or something, but
that's what it kind of feels like when I race people who have been actually training.
Okay. Dangerous.
It's really dangerous. Yeah. So spend a lot of time by yourself off the back, but I'm still racing and it's still really fun. And I'm glad it's there. I'm glad it's a part of our community. And it's just unfortunate there seems to be in Portland at least a divide between the racing community and the non-racing community.
Sure.
I know that the executive director of OBRA, which is the Oregon Bicycle Racing Association, is a good friend of mine named Kenji Sugihara. And I know that's something that's been on his agenda for a while. It's trying to bridge that gap and
we're going to have to talk to him. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should. Kenji is amazing. You should totally have him on this show.
All right, we'll do it.
I love him. He has been, and it's not as much as getting non-racers into racing, but getting racers to care about things that are important to all bike bikes sure. of us. Right. Like road safety, road improvements, consequences for bad driving, mm-hmm. Getting money allocated to bikeways that we all use no matter how fast we're using them.
Right. And Sharrows on the arterials, perhaps.
Yeah.
Probably
so,
not. But,
well,
no. not,
if you,
not at this
if you are strictly just a racer, those things wouldn't really be on your radar. Like you don't,
but they should be because
oh, they should
we're
be.
Using we're using those roads for training, and we want them to be safe too. So, a lot of times, I think people don't think it matters to them because, yeah. well, I don't often ride the Springwater Corridor, and it's like, well, right. yeah, you do. You use it to get to all sorts of places for training rides, mm-hmm. and I use it
a or lot using of, it for training rides.
Using it for a training ride, and it's we all like to ride up to Skyline. Like, no matter whether we're using it for race training or we're just out on a tour, we'd mm-hmm. all like that to be safer. And just because you're not riding it at 18 miles an hour doesn't mean that it doesn't need to be safe for all of us. And that's right. what we're trying to get. I think that's what the mission of Kenji's mission has been for a while is to okay. get. And I think the BTA is sort of looking at that as well, is trying to get that crossover and unless into getting more people into racing, but getting the racers to care about mm-hmm. bike advocacy because it does matter to us whether we think it does or not.
Right. It's not like one ULOC against every windshield in the world. It's actually a it's right. a diplomatic procedure
exactly.
where everyone gets to gotta talk and figure each other's out and yeah.
And just to treat each other with respect. It's just I have a very hard time with the lack of respect that I see between the two groups a lot of times. And just because we do ride faster and we do, you know, does it mean that you can't tell people you're there and obey the traffic rules?
Sure.
Those types
sure.
of things.
Yeah.
We do. I think that the consequence of that is the people who are behaving badly. And it's both racers and non-racers. And when you piss off somebody in a car, you don't have the consequence. It's the next cyclist that they encounter.
Right.
It's going to have the consequence because they're going to be pissed and they're going to be pissed at the next cyclist and the next cyclist
yeah.
and the next cyclist.
Yeah. I compare it to, I grew up with a religious background and like the fish on the car, the Christian fish.
Right.
When I was a kid, I had one of those on my car. And so it was always like, I have to make really good decisions in traffic because people are going to hate Christians for like my driving. And I think about that, like, you know, I've kind of moved a long ways from where I was religiously, but I still think about the idea of like, I'm on a bike and I identify as a bicyclist to anyone who sees me. So if I'm on the road making weird decisions or like behaving unsafely or breaking the law, a lot of people are going to, exactly what you're saying, like they're going to pay that forward in the negative sense to the next bicyclist they encounter if they're driving.
Which is funny when you think about dealing with cyclists, especially people who religiously wear their kits, you can find out who those people are.
It's like the fish. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a, you know, if you see somebody in a particular kit, you know, maybe not somebody who just regularly rides around Portland, mm-hmm. the racing community, we know exactly who those people are. If you say this, if you see something on the Oberlist server, you see something on the news and they describe what's going on, like, yeah, you're like, I know who that team is.
Yeah.
I know who those people are.
More like team asshole.
Yeah.
So, do you have any perspective on, because Skyline Boulevard here in Portland, it's like one of the highest places in town to go ride. It's a elevation and it's got some significant climbing on it. It's a great place to go out and ride. There's some great views, but it's also one of the least equipped bicycling facilities and probably the one most fraught with controversy between people going out to ride bikes and people driving their vehicles, motor vehicles along it. So do you have any perspective or experience up there that's strange or interesting? Or
I've been chased by dogs
okay.
a lot, especially if you get out towards the really north end of Skyline, Dixie Mountain. You get more towards Scappoose. I think things get a little bit weird. A lot of my perspective goes with where will I ride where I'm okay being riding by myself? Mm. And that's another gender issue.
Yeah. Well, there was the dude the controversial motorist who was like honking and driving dangerously and being pretty belligerent to a lot of bicyclists. I remember. I don't remember what his name was, but there was a big like community function afterwards to try and figure out like, how do we address this and how do we make sure that like everybody's happy?
Yeah. I don't even know where to start other than the cyclists just need to take accountable for their own behavior.
Right.
That's not some place where you ride 2x2.
Mm. Yeah. Well, going uphill and tight corners with low visibility. Yeah.
I mean, we just, you know, from a cyclist standpoint, we need to be accountable for our own behavior and staying safe. So mm. using lights,
that, yeah.
you know, riding, you know, we do have the right to the whole road, but that doesn't mean we need to have the whole road. We need to be, my perspective is riding like 6 inches outside the white line just so people can't pass me dangerously, mm. but I'm not taking up the entire road from people.
Yeah. Splitting the difference between taking the lane and not.
Yeah, because we have the right to, again. But I think I don't. I just want to go for a ride, and I don't want to piss anybody off.
Yeah, you don't the Oregon legislation, the like number of the law, like on your jersey or whatever. You don't have.
Are those
a sticker? I used to have the sticker actually on my bike bucket back when I first had one of those, and it's like ORS, you know, number point number, and bicycles allowed full lane, big.
I feel like I should know that considering I'm an attorney.
I should know what the number is, yeah, but I don't. But yeah, it's one of those kind of like, I see that in some ways just kind of like, oh, it's making the law visible. In other ways, it's just a big middle finger to a lot of other people. So I am still divided.
Yeah, the only thing that I ever wanted to do was we used to ride out Clackamas River Road a lot when I was bicycle training. And we always thought that we should have a Sarah Palin jersey to ride out there in Clackamas County, and then when people would quit buzzing and throwing Coke bottles at us, if we had some sort of or an NRA jersey or something,
sure, something that identifies
totally get excited
with
about
the red
that.
State half. Interesting. That's not a bet. You kind of go incognito in costume.
Yeah. There'd be like, no way, you're on a bike. You're not one of us.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a great picture from Russ and Laura from Path Less Pedaled of a bike camping trip with families. There was like, I think it was Dodge Park, and they took a bunch of families with kids and cargo bikes out to go camping. And there was a guy with an enormous American flag hanging off the back of his long tail cargo bike. It was like a Yuba Mundo or something like that.
That's a good strategy.
And I was one. I always assumed he was just a patriot, but maybe it was a strategy.
Maybe that's why. I think it's Primal sells U.S. Army jerseys and bibs. Maybe that's why they do that.
Okay, yeah, that's
it's defensive bicycling.
Not a bad idea. That's fascinating. Okay. I don't know if we have any like Republican or conservative listeners to the show. If you are, write in. I'd love to know how you're.
How can we help you?
How you receive this whole program?
Especially if you're a Republican in mail, since I've managed to insult all sorts of people.
Oh, sure.
Since we started,
right. Well, that's why we're here. So,
My dad will be the first one writing a letter.
You can send all your hate mail to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Well, thank you for coming in and telling some stories, Lindsay. We really appreciate it. And any parting words? Is there anything else, advice you would give to us?
Share the road.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Well, should we do some one headline I thought was particularly interesting? Should we do that one?
Yes.
All right.
We need to do that one.
All right, let's do it. In that case, let me get you the headline music because it's going to be awesome.
I also have to bring up set headline since my phone rang.
That kind of mucks things up a little bit.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. It circles around the city lights.
From the Oregonian, police sergeant pours syrup on transit benches to deter loitering. Records released by the department Saturday show that Sergeant Bruce Kelly, a TriMet Transit Police supervisor in August, purchased 2 gallon jugs of maple syrup. He expensed the 1998 purchase from an Albertson store to the city. According to records, Kelly kept the syrup in his office and poured part of one jug onto a bench at the Willow Creek TriMet station. Kelly's actions violated two department expectations, including one that says peace officers shall not engage in any activity which would create a conflict of interest or would be in violation of any law, and another that said says peace officers shall at all times conduct themselves in a manner which does not discredit their profession or department.
Right.
His supervisor tells him, you recognize that pouring the syrup on the bench, while possibly effective, was done out of frustration and probably a juvenile thing to do. Furthermore, you recognize as a supervisor, you would have found such action unacceptable if done by one of your officers.
Yeah.
Yes, this power corrupts.
Yeah, seriously.
Power corrupts.
Absolute power corrupting absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolute maple sweetens absolutely. It's just such a great... I would love to know every step of the logical process in the officer's mind that says, there's a bunch of people hanging out here loitering. I'm done with that. To, maple syrup is sticky. They won't want to sit on it. Like the jump in logic. I guess it's logical, but like just squaring with the fact that he is, as they say, a peace officer. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
Also, it's very expensive. That's a lot of maple syrup. And maple syrup.
Oh,
is
but I mean, what's $20 on the city dole?
Right. When it's coming out of the city coffers, I suppose that's okay. That's that's a funny story. So yeah. That and we got one more there. What this one I'm actually particularly excited about.
Yeah, Bike Portland news roundup. Plans are in the works for a possible rail trail from Washington County to Tillamook, Oregon. And the way I read it in the email that you sent me, I thought like it was already there. Like it was already in.
Oh, right. Yeah. So don't get too excited. Happened. It's not built yet. But
then I read like the actual article.
Yeah. This is, let me look this up because it is the Salmonberry Corridor. And you can check this out. There's not a whole lot of information just yet, but the Salmonberry Corridor, .wordpress.com. We got a link to this on the website. The map here shows how this would go from Banks, Oregon, down to Tillamook, following the old rail line that goes through said Salmonberry Canyon. And yeah, that would be so, so cool. Have you heard anything about this, Lindsay?
I haven't, but I think I want to ride it.
Seriously. I got onto Google Maps the other day just to see if I could do it now. But they say when the article that I was reading was talking about how there's still a bunch of stuff obstructing the corridor, and it's still owned by the rail company, probably not the one that put it in, but up until 5 years ago, they were still running like scenic coastal trains at least part the way down this corridor.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. And the one, the area on the coast from, what is it, Nehalem and Manzanita and Wheeler down to Tillamook, I believe that is still actually a scenic. Yeah, because it goes through Rockaway Beach where they have the one of the stations. You can ride this train, and it's more of a tourism train than an actual transportation train, but still kind of cool. So, anyways, I'm very excited about the possibility, the prospect. The Tillamook State Forest is already one of my favorite places to go out and camp and ride. There's a bunch of great spots out there. The more we talk about this, probably the more popular it's going to get.
Oh, we shouldn't talk about it.
We talk to everyone. Everyone listens to us. That's not true.
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited to like go out into the Tillamook Forest.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've done it a couple times already, going out and camping.
Totally.
Just the fact that there will be a dedicated rail to trail or bike trail.
I love rails to trails, definitely.
Have you done the one down in Klamath County?
I have not. That's on my list of things to do. It's just far enough away that without owning a car, it's difficult to get there. But you can get to Klamath on Amtrak. And I'm curious about the possibility of like camping out at the end of the thing, like, you know, taking it in a couple of chunks and putting up a tent somewhere along the way.
I'm from that area.
Are you?
So if you ever need some advice on camping out in Klamath, okay. Klamath County.
Really?
I'm your girl.
Okay. Well, we're going to stay in touch about this. That
bring a gun.
Okay.
It's helpful.
Oh, yeah. Just like Ellie Tallheimer.
Should I just have... That's right. She's packing heat.
She's packing heat.
Are you talking about a gun for protection against other people, protection against wildlife, or simply to make yourself feel... to eat?
Dinner.
We're going to eat the gun?
You're going to eat. Please don't eat the gun. Please don't.
It's the worst decision you can make. So, yeah.
It's total jest.
Okay. Gotcha. There I am taking it all serious. I'm sorry. I should be able to read that by now.
Yeah.
So that sounds really cool, though. It's just, some of it is paved. Other parts are gravel, but really good for a reasonably fat tire. I have 32s, I think. That's what I run on my bike.
I have 28s.
Okay, yeah. And we took both
of
those.
But they're a hardy 28.
Yeah, we took both of those over, Bohemia Mountain, north of Diamond Lake and Greater Lake, outside. Yeah.
As far as I know, the only cyclists to ever summit that peak.
Well, as far as we know, we can say that.
Yeah. I qualified that, right?
Yeah, but there was hella gravel on that route, and that was due to my poor planning, but
if it's
not
on Strava, it never happened.
Fuck.
Damn it.
Fuck. Okay.
If it did, I'm like going to be a, you know, 50th out of 52.
Right. It's on Facebook. Does that count?
Totally.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Okay. But we can't prove that we did it in a certain amount of time. Okay. Well, hey, let's close this show out. That was good. Again, Lindsay, thank you for coming in.
Mails?
We don't have any mails.
We don't?
There was none. I mean, do you see any?
Nah,
that's cool.
No?
No.
Maybe? No, I'm an idiot.
No, that's not true.
Oh, no, we do have one piece of mail. Oh,
okay.
Sent to us from the mashup ride. Someone gave me a slice of pizza.
Oh, that's right.
After the mashup ride.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, the Petalpalooza mashup ride hot anticipation of the 6 weeks later until Petalpalooza actually gets here.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, in thanks for the pizza, I gave her a sticker. And she wrote us back saying, you're welcome. She didn't notice the sticker until she had gotten home because she had gone off talking with her friends. And I had already written the note, so I threw it like in her helmet.
Oh, right. And so like she had it between her helmet and her hair all the way home. Right. Yeah.
So she gets home. And I thought, what is this? A kind note of appreciation on a sticker? A bike themed podcast? Intrigued, I checked out the URL and listened to your most recent episode, which would have been the underpants episode.
Yeah, I talked about underpants.
Yes, I love this story about crashing into Emily Finch. You guys are pretty funny. Anyway, just wanted to let you know that I will be tuning in again. So thanks for thanking me by the way of shameless self-promotion.
Yay. It worked. Right, we know on. We go from 4 listeners to 5. Cool.
All right.
Okay. All right. Well, let's read these credits and get out of here. Was there anything else we need to cover? Are we good? We talk about everything?
Did we talk about cancer?
I don't know. Did we? I think we did.
I think okay. I might be done talking about cancer for the week.
All right. Again, thank you, Lindsay. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks
for coming in. All right. Here it comes.
Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests and or drinks. Write to us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Gmail.com.
Or call us and leave us a message at 503-847-9774 or text us at same number. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast.
Sprocket Podcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Find him on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. Thanks to Hurtbird for our headline sounder. Find them at hurtbirdmusic.com.
All right, everybody have a great week. We'll talk to you later on. Bye-bye.
Every time I've been on the radio, I did something for KBOO, and I actually accidentally headbutted. You know, they have the mics right there.
I do that so often.
And I was laughing at something, and I just went, pomp.
Yeah, totally. And that's it's exactly what I do. It is when I'm like, oh, that was hilarious. And then, yeah. Thank you, Aaron. Much appreciated.
I always feel weird doing this to people. Like, just sit still and
It's kind of it's very personal. It's kind of like if you have a tailor, like, you know, measuring your clothes around you or something.
Right.
Putting a microphone in someone's face is, exactly.
That's what they would use.
Yeah. Straight pins?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's true. I like safety pins better. I'll just say that.
Because they're safe.
Precisely.
Yeah, I like to lean back, so I'll just get
there.
This.
We go. Oh, whoop. So does the stand.
There we go. Is that good?
Apparently, that was a
load-bearing
table.
Awesome. So,
yeah. Thank you, Aaron. That's why we pay you a lot.
In soda.
We don't pay you at all.
Damn it. Shit.
Okay.